So today I'll be talking about and presenting Jake Schreckheise's kind of a summary of his doctorate research at Virginia Tech. So I'll be breezing over the material methods and focusing on the results, especially the later results that have not been presented here at ASHS or at other meetings. So we'll be presenting the rate of phosphorus needed to grow seven ornamental taxa and really focusing on the subsequent fate within the container system. So the challenge within a phosphorus in a containerized production system is that pine bark has very limited ability to absorb P. We apply phosphorus continually via control-release fertilizers or fertigation, and it is leached from containers by our ever-frequent irrigation that is applied daily and sometimes multiple times within a day. And this results to 10 to 50% fertilizer use efficiency, meaning that only about half or much less than that of the actual applied phosphorus is utilized by that crop. So the question that we came up with 5 years ago was, can we further reduce applied phosphorus fertilizer? Most studies that we went back and researched found that almost all the research was done above 5 milligrams per liter. If we look back into ecology and agronomy crops, that's a pretty high number for what the soil or substrate solution should need. So when people identified the minimum amount of concentration needed to grow a given ornamental crop, they usually would come up with 5 or 10 milligrams per liter, with the exception of Havas and Baker with Rhododendron Victor. They never looked below 5 parts per million or milligrams per liter. So we wanted to look at that critical range between 0 and 5, and so we set out to do that. We also thought there was opportunities to absorb phosphorus with what we already are doing. Dolomite, calcium magnesium carbonate, which we already routinely add to pine bark, which is a very inexpensive, should adsorb or precipitate as calcium phosphate in our mines. We also are adding micronutrient fertilizers, which have a lot of heavy metals, namely iron, which we also routinely add at 1.5 to 1 pound to our pine bark per yard to our substrates. As needed for nutrition in a sulfate form, so readily soluble, or they may be chelated forms, and these will also precipitate or absorb to the phosphorus. So we came up with four studies, actually it's five, that were conducted to accomplish two overarching objectives. We wanted to determine the minimum P fertilization amount and corresponding pore water concentrations needed to achieve the maximal growth for containerized nursery crops, and then determine the effect of dolomite and micronutrient fertilizer and pine bark on P retention during irrigation. So I'm going to focus on number one really quickly and then switch over to number two. So for minimum P fertilization, we needed to start with liquid feed. While we know it's not practical, we had to start somewhere. So we started in a greenhouse, micro-irrigated, in which we fertigated three taxa. Then we moved to two locations using two ecoregions. We had Harrell's blend up CRFs, controlled release fertilizers, which were then overhead irrigated, and we looked at a number of taxa, doing a number of rate studies to see how those plants responded, with the growers being concerned that fertigation does not mimic CRF because of proximity of the prill or the fertilizer to that root. So whatever you can do in liquid is not good enough with CRF. You're going to need more because the CRF will not be able to supply as much to the root as liquid would be, with being their belief. So they needed proof is in the pudding. Show us with CRF as well. And Harrell's jumped on board and helped us out. So for the liquid, this is 84 after days after initiation for Karen, Azalea, and Limelight Hydrangea. We had 0.5 to 6 parts per million of phosphorus while we applied we kept nitrogen and phosphorus constant at 80 milligrams and 50 milligrams. And as you can see, we grew Karen Azalea at 4 and 6 parts per million. We got maximal shoot growth. And for Limelight Hydrangea, we got maximal growth also at 4 and 6. What's interesting is the numbers on the containers that you see here is the actual pore water measured via pore through, which were 2.3 and 5.1. So at 1 and 2.3 pore water pore through, which, remember, 5 to 10 is the currently recommended best management practice, we are receiving maximal growth in these crops. So we're at half to a fifth of that recommendation to receive a maximal growth in these. And Helleri holly, which is the staple crop in the southeast mid-Atlantic region, has no response at all to phosphorus rate in this liquid trial in the rainout shelter greenhouse. We also wanted to make sure we were understanding how this was affecting foliar concentration, so we graphed shoot dry weight by foliar P concentration, so on the y-axis, over P concentration on the x-axis, where we could use the isotope and the derivative to find where the maximums occurred. And through that, we could find that maximum concentration for line-light hydrangea was 4.7, which is closer to that 5, and for Karen azalea was 2.9. Helleri holly, flat, it didn't matter, so we just assume that all of that curve you saw in foliar P concentration is luxury consumption. We can use that to kind of help calibrate the foliar handbook, analysis handbook 2 criteria to realize that some of their suggestions in there may be based on luxury consumption and not where minimum criteria are being identified. We then moved on to CRFs, as mentioned before, where we looked at shoot dry weight. So we looked at a 15-6-12, which is a 3-1-2 ratio in PK versus a 18-1-12 up through an 18-4-12. And we looked at this in Blacksburg and Virginia Beach, those two ecoregions. And this is hydrangea macrophylla and Ilex crenata on the very bottom. So I'm comparing hydrangea macrophylla in the top two pictures for Blacksburg and Virginia Beach. We get a bit of a different response because of the cool nights and the what we think is because of the evapotranspiration. So we're getting passive and active uptake, so it's affecting the system. So we get a bit of a different growth response. But maximal growth was occurred in 18-2 up to 18-4-12 in those. So we were able to at least reduce phosphorus by 25%. And then in this case, I wanted to throw Helleri holly in here because in this one case, season to season, things different. Helleri holly totally responded, did not respond at all. We totally got more growth this time in Virginia Beach with Helleri holly, which showed that 18-4-12 grew the best, outgrew everything else, so it had a total response to it. So we had a seasonality variation as well. So not just taxa variation, but also seasonality in year. But again, as you can see, if we look at poor water P shown in on the containers, we can see that with all of those phosphorus concentrations that are measured via poor water, pour through P are below the 5 parts per million that are being suggested by the current best management practices. So our conclusions for these set of trials was that the growth response to P is taxa specific, and therefore they should be fertilized accordingly. So for extension, we should be doing this, asking growers to be testing these products on a crop-to-crop basis. But if we think of hydrangea, so we're pretty confident right now that we could tell growers they could go 25% reduction in hydrangea, number 2 NAS crop, right? So for flowering shrubs. So if we could get them to reduce phosphorus on just hydrangea macrophylla across the mid-Atlantic and the southeast, that has huge implications on a singular crop. So we do believe that this could have large implications, even though we need to test it on a number of crops. We did. That's why we tested rows and other things. We don't believe that pour through P concentration is a dependable indicator of P fertility. I did not get into it here, but we actually believe within that 30-minute window of taking your pour through P, we have noticed that there is actual active uptake and drawdown for active growing plants, and the size of the plant will determine also how much is being withdrawn from that pour through concentration. P fertilization can be reduced 80 to 90% for Helleri holly, though that's a little questionable, 40% for Karen azalea, and 50% for big leaf hydrangea. It can potentially reduce fertilizer expenses, which we're not sure about that because of reformulation, but contribute to achieving P load reductions in surface waters. We're continuing this research with Harrell's and comparing numerous amounts of crops. We're actually even working with Michigan and done a trial on our raised beds, looking at pea runoff and leaching, comparing 18-4-8s and 18-3-12s. I think we've got another 7 to 10 taxa. Michigan, Chital and them are also looking at a number of taxa and the physiological responses to low phosphorus. So eventually, out of clean water, we hope to have a nice compendium of a number of ornamental taxa and how they respond to low phosphorus and if this is economically viable. So what I'm more excited about talking to you, that's cool stuff, but is the effect of dolomite micronutrient fertilizer and pine bark on retention. And Jake Schreckheis, again, this is all his dissertation work. We conducted a greenhouse trial with crepe myrtle because it's fast growing and it's a staple of the Mid-Atlantic South. We added a CRF dolomite. We followed the Builderback recommendation of a pulverized and a coarse 50-50 ratio at a recommended rate, and then the recommended rate of a micronutrient being Micromax. We filtered the soil, so there's been very little fractionation of phosphorus to understand the varying fractions of phosphorus and how they interact in a soilless system. So we took the non-filtered leachate, we did not filter it, digested it, ran it through ICP, induced coupled plasma spectrometry, and that would give us total phosphorus, which would include all biological and non-biological, right? So that's everything, if we did our job right. Then we would take filtered, and we would do a not digest and send it through ion chromatography, which would give us the species. So that would give us phosphate, orthophosphate, or we would send it to ICP, and that would give us total dissolved phosphorus. And that is that would be the soil definitions of how we would fractionate that. And if we think of that, we can also think of that 0.54 micron filter being a way to discuss it as the abiotic versus the non-biotic functions that are happening in the container of the total phosphorus and the total dissolved phosphorus fractions and how they're doing it, the particulate versus the non-particulate phosphorus. Now remember, plants only want ortho-P really to be taken up. The rest is just reactive phosphorus that can be environmental implications or contributing to that phosphorus we can't find when we're trying to do phosphorus budgets or being wasted and not being taken by the plant. So our findings are, this was all in a column study, if I remind you, where we packed columns and we irrigated them daily. We went to great lengths. It's all in Jake's dissertation if you want to read the details to make sure we did this correctly and only extracted what we wanted. So we had the total P, dissolved P, and phosphate taken out over the 50 days. And so this is the control. So we had the no amendment. So no fertilizer, no amendment. And so what you first see is that with total P, we have about 12 parts per million coming off of the inherent bark. And this is what Ogden told us. I think it was Ogden told us that 9 parts per million is about the inherent level of phosphorus in bark native. It's not good for growing, but it is an inherent amount that's coming off of the system. And we see that go out in about the first 10 to 20 days. We add the CRF, and we see that the CRF's really not adding anything to that because it doesn't really begin to release till about 20 days into the system, which is what we expect with the lag period. So at 30 days, the CRF's really starting to kick and add that, and we see that on the orthophosphate all the way to the right, that it is contributing almost all of the phosphorus species at this point. The total and dissolved phosphorus are all at the same concentration, which is made up of the orthophosphorus. Now we add dolomite to the system and we see an automatic reduction off of just the CRF. We add the micros, we see a less of a reduction, but still a reduction from the CRF only. And we add the CRF dolomite plus micros, and we see it added a reduction of that orthophosphorus over that time. So if we blow up just the orthophosphorus, which is the plant available and the most highly environmentally reactive, what we're interested in, we can see that with the control being the red line as the baseline versus the CRF, you can see they have it, and you can see where it comes off. But then you can go through, percent decreases. We have about a 50% decrease when we add the dolomite and micros. What we think is the micros are very good at controlling the initial phosphate package from the bark. They're highly soluble and they're binding up. What we actually believe is that is the actual dolomite and micronutrient packages, which we had to seek out and find. It's not the iron. So they have put calcium and magnesium inside of that package, and that's highly reactive, very fine ground, which we were almost sure it was going to be the iron, and that's what's going on. Whereas the dolomite, the coarse and the fine dolomite, is what's giving you longevity of holding back and reducing that phosphate over time from 30 days on and reducing down about 50% and controlling the system from that point forward when the CRF is releasing. So overall, the dolomite plus micros reduced orthophosphate by about approximately 70% over no amendments. We then took this to the greenhouse, and we added CRFs, dolomite, and or micronutrients again. What's amazing is we had to fight ourselves about how bad this looked. So we look at the pH first over time over the 90-day trial. And if you're trying to do soil chemistry, this is going to just not be good. But this is realistic. I had to convince Jake. We actually have growers that are doing each one of these treatments in the Mid-Atlantic and Southeast. So this is practical in all senses that these are real-life conditions. We have growers growing with each of these combinations. And as you can see, with each of these, we have total different recommendations. And micros are contributing to acidity and bringing us down. And so that's what we're seeing. Total P versus orthophosphorus for each of the treatments in milligrams per liter, if you just look at the y-axis over time. And what I'm really looking for is just the overall trends that total P and orthophosphorus basically follow each other. And you'll see the overall reduction in the same trend as we looked at before. But the real takeaway here before I move forward is that 70 to 83% of the total phosphorus is orthophosphorus in the system. So what was coming out after that initial load is really that reactive phosphorus that is plant available, but it's also environmentally available. So we do want to deal with that, or we want to use that for the crop. We also ran Visual Mintec, which is a speciation program that lets us see what's going on in the container. What we really found was interesting is that in all instances, manganese was actually a controller of phosphorus. It was forming magnesium phosphates in all of the systems. And calcium phosphate was less of a hydroxyapatite, actually, mineral, was forming to less of a degree than we thought. But in the lime, when the pH was optimal, we were forming hydroxyapatite, which should be able to dissolve over time and resupply phosphorus to the system, and that was happening in both the lime treatments. Really quick, Sarah White ran DOC for us, and we were able to conclude that the reason we weren't seeing iron interactions, which we expected, was because of the DOC is a very fast reaction, and it was probably coating the iron and partially explaining the absence of those solid phases. So it was getting to the iron and complexing it before. However, we probably could be getting bridges where the iron DOC phosphate bridges, which we would not have detected, and speciation programs are not sensitive enough to build out those. So we could have still had humic acid phosphorus complexes that we believe were happening that we can't use through this program. So the amendment effect on orthophosphate is very similar. We see the reductions of CRF, lime, micros, and lime and micros following the exact same trend. What we notice is that the CRF in lime starts to become greater after 60 days. And what we notice is that 70 to 80 days is the only time that the lime plus micros is actually not different from the control. But the dolomite and micros did reduce OPP by about approximately 64% over the 91 days. If we look at the growth rate, we notice that the lime did result. CRF lime is not the best treatment for Lagerstromia or crepe myrtle, but it was not the lime that did it. It was the pH. If you look at CRF plus lime and micros, we find that the lime was not hindering growth and that we had plant tissue content was not affected. So in all of the treatments, where we reduced the phosphorus, the most being CRF, lime, and micros, we were not plant limiting of phosphorus to the plant. So these amendments were never going to hinder you from growth. So we never pulled back phosphorus enough that we became problematic to you as a grower. So you should not worry about that. You should be more worried about the impact of the amendments on pH and be worried about those overall holistic growth patterns. Just a quick plant of how we grew, and you can see the CRF plus lime was the smallest. Our conclusions are we reduced it without affecting over 90. It's highly dependable on health, plant health. TP is pour through, and that micronutrients, dolomite, are an automatic BMP. Thanks to everyone, including Matt Eich, our soil chemist. Thank you. Probably no time for questions.